Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
This is an ESO and Dude Letter production. Welcome to Mission Briefing. Hey everyone, and welcome to what is possibly one of the worst movies we've ever done. I know we've already done it once. As a myopia, and you'd think doing it as a mission briefing where we're a little bit softer on the movies with all the fanboyness, it would be a little bit easier, but The World Is Not Enough is still a tough pill to swallow. They bring back Robbie Coltrane just to kill him, and well, I don't think it gets much worse than Christmas Jones. So please enjoy. Now, I will say it's been a while since we've plugged this, but if you haven't yet, rate and review the podcast on iTunes, whether you get this from the main feed or from the Mission Briefing feed. Also, follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook group for myopia. And, you know, we only have a handful of Bond movies left. And when we get there, we will do some wrap-up shows, but those won't appear on the myopia feed. That will be Mission Briefing only. So please, if you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We're getting near the end, and I want to get those numbers up. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Cornflake.
So we host the Flopcast.
We cover nerd and geek subjects of all types, but this is sort of a sillier, goofier side of geekdom, I'd say.
We love to talk about music, especially funny music.
We talk about comic books, conventions.
Saturday morning cartoons!
Oh yeah. I'd say if you're going to put the Flopcast in Brady Bunch terms, we're like the Cousin Oliver of podcasting. And we do a ridiculous new Flopcast episode every week.
What is wrong with us?
We really have nothing else to do. We're part of the Earth Station One Podcast Network.
And you can find us at flopcast.net. No when to touch. No one ever
did the wanting to rush. Welcome to Mission Briefing. This week we watch The World Is Not Enough, which adds significance in the title, I guess. It kind of trailed off there. This one Jeremy kind of liked.
You're saying that like it's a bad thing.
No, I'm just surprised.
Dare he?
I'll tell you what, it's one of these ones that I think no one talks about.
Well, Jeremy just really loves Christmas. For him, it comes every day.
I would say, frankly, she didn't need to be in this movie.
No.
There's a director's cut somewhere where she doesn't even show up. And we're better for it.
Remember those 6 months when she was married to Charlie Sheen?
Oh, God.
I doubt he remembers those 6 months. What's her actress? What's the name?
Denise Richards.
Denise Richards, thank you.
Yeah. She used to have a career, but now she doesn't.
Deservedly. That's a weird era of actresses where there was like supermodels that everyone knew the name of that didn't deserve to do anything other than just be supermodels.
Nah. See also Tara Reid.
Although Tyra Banks actually now has a talk show, which is weird.
Yeah. Who was the European model in American Pie that was in a couple other things?
Oh, Shannon Elizabeth.
Yeah, her?
Yeah, she... Is she still alive?
I think she's alive. I don't think she does much. Yeah. She might be the one behind the attempts to make an American Pie reunion movie. It's definitely not Eugene Levy. He's too busy like blowing the skirt up of whatever his name is. Snickers commercial.
No one? That's fine.
Oh, Willem Dafoe. Yeah.
Thank you. I was going to say Marilyn Monroe, but I'm like, she's dead. That's really creepy for him to try to do.
Well, that didn't stop them from bringing back Grand Moff Tarkin.
It's true.
Yeah, boo.
Well, I'll tell you what. Dead people need to stop acting. Mm-hmm. At least they didn't try to bring back Desmond Llewellyn.
Don't give them any ideas. Yeah. You know that's coming.
Yeah, I know it is. But we should talk a little bit about The World Is Not Enough, which, if I had to guess, of the Pierce Brosnan movies, is the one that people have seen the least, probably.
This may very well have been the first one I ever saw.
I mean, it was one of the first ones I saw in theaters, because I think GoldenEye came out when I was young, like 9.
95.
Yeah. And so, like, being 9, I didn't go to the theater, saw it. I rented it from Hollywood Video or some tripe.
Oh, you were all rebellious, weren't you, with your Hollywood Video membership?
I know, right? You could rent Nintendos and things, like a plastic case. But regardless, I saw it in theaters too. I just remember it being something. I don't know. Like this came out in 99, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's just completely forgettable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think my biggest problem with this, and I don't know if we can say this now or later, but there's so much that's, you know, I don't know if it was meant as tributes to previous Bond movies, but there's so much that is just from older Bond movies that you're like, okay, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's kind of cool and everything, but
oh, you mean like the skiing scenes and stuff?
Skiing, boat chases, submarines. It's all
well,
been done.
I'll tell you what I missed if we're talking about old Bond references. Who could have really spiced this movie up? J.W. Pepper!
Oh, God. He probably would have been more useful than Christmas Jones.
I will say, I did like Valentin coming back.
Yeah, that was cool.
He was a definite highlight.
Yes.
Robbie Coltrane, man. Like, can you imagine like how happy he was when Harry Potter came along? Because his career was dead. Like,
He did a bunch of stuff in the UK. He was on that popular TV show for a while.
But if your one international chance was this, I mean, your second, because GoldenEye was a big success, right? But like, it's not like Joe Don Baker's career exploded after he was J.W. Pepper twice.
That was Joe Don Baker?
J.W. Pepper? No, J.W. Pepper. He was the guy from GoldenEye.
Oh, Jack Wade.
Jack Wade.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, you get you said J.W. Pepper. I'm thinking Jimmy Bond. Him and his damn Fisher. I love his like knockoff Kangol hats.
I love how when I said J.W. Pepper's name, you just took your headphones off.
Well, to be fair, you did speak every microphone. Like you messed
well, that's the way to pronounce his name. That's not my fault.
You mean the fact that he called all the black people boy and like,
yeah.
That's a weird character that lasted in. I think he showed up twice. He also ended up in For Your Eyes Only. No, he showed up in another one. And
he was a very memorable character.
I will say something that they did learn from J.W. Pepper. I think it's Live and Let Die where they do the flip and there's the corkscrew.
Yeah.
In this one, during the boat chase, he does a corkscrew in the boat. No slide whistle.
There's no slide whistle.
Yes.
It's an oddly tuned down scene, too, because like the cold open is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will say I like that MI6 and James Bond seem to be behind the eight ball the whole time, and especially in the beginning, like Bond gets in this like Swiss banker's route. Well, we should explain the plot. Why don't we just do the cold open? Then we'll let Jeremy attempt to give a plot synopsis for the whole thing.
Well, it was like a John Le Carré scene. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay. Mm-hmm. The Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy guy, mm-hmm. where he's going in to retrieve some money that somebody had paid to buy an MI6 report, and an agent had been killed for said report, and Bond was looking to find out who had assassinated his fellow agent.
Well, and I guess more to the point, it's like a Mission Impossible, because this is, what, 4 years after the first Mission Impossible movie? Yeah. And the first Mission Impossible movie is doing Bond better than Bond, so they kind of crib.
Yeah.
Now I want to see a Brian De Palma-directed Bond movie.
That ship has sailed.
You don't think?
He's not really doing much anymore.
True. Well, what did the guy do before the most recent Bond? American Beauty?
Oh, Sam Mendes? He did Road to Perdition, Jarhead. That was him.
American Beauty, right?
Yeah.
That's him? I mean, nothing huge. No, you're right. It's been 20 years since he could have done this.
He already had a retrospective documentary made about him. He's retired.
Mm, fair. I don't know.
Well, in all fairness, Jackie Chan won his MTV Lifetime Achievement Award before he became big in the States.
Oh, all
right. I don't know. I think it'd be a fun one. I do like kind of the pensive...
Well, Brian De Palma couldn't get away with all those wonderful Bond one-liners that he's using in this bank scene.
That's true. Oh, my God. This movie might be the worst. Although I did remember that Sean Connery, Pierce Brosnan, is a handsome man in this movie. He looks good in this one. He looks like Bond, especially when he's being strangled in the torture chair.
Oh, I love how... We'll get to that, but I just love how she's straddling him and asks, do you know what happens to men when they're strangled to death?
And he's like, actually, I'm kind of getting raped right now.
David Carradine knows.
He sure did. He sure did. I'm going to let that just hang for a second. I didn't even mean that. That's good. Yeah, so we end up with a very bizarre chase scene here. Bond is stealing the money back, right? He's trying to get the money back for a guy named King who'll become important in a second.
Because when you have a British rich guy, of course he's going to be named King.
Yeah, so the third Baron of some such that knows M for some reason. Which we'll get to. But then just as the Bond turns the tables and the banker is about to say who paid them off, the banker gets shot dead by a sniper through a window. And then a chase scene ensues.
Wasn't it the knife in the back of his throat and the woman that was there was running down the steps away from the banker?
And the window gets shot out, but it misses Bond at the last minute. And then a knife gets stabbed through the banker.
And he tears that thing off the window that's as high as the building that he uses to rappel down the side of the building. What was that exactly?
That was the pull tie to the Venetian blinds, I think. Right?
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he uses it to rappel down like a 10-story building or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that's whatever. And then tying the other end to a guy, an unconscious bodyguard.
I just love how nobody noticed that. Nobody was like looking up, the man dangling from the window until he hit the ground, and then there's like three people watching him.
Yeah. I was so expecting him to say, oh, the lift was out of service.
Something.
Yeah. Yes. But he just looks at him and he's like, okay. And he walks away. I mean, come on. In a movie that has probably some of the worst Bond one-liners ever, they miss some good opportunities.
Yeah, and so here we are. Bond has gotten the money, but the person gets away, the sniper, whoever it is. And so they take the money to MI5, and we find out that King is friends with M, and that they are counting the money. Just to make sure the money is all back, £5 million, etc., or $5 million. And Bond gets a drink from M, and his fingers start to fizz. And then all of a sudden we realize, why is he sticking his fingers in whiskey?
Because Bond just absorbs whiskey through his skin.
He sweats it out into his glass and drinks it again. He drinks constantly in this movie, by the way. Probably it's more noticeable than usual, but he is drinking constantly.
We're not quite at Daniel Craig levels, but yeah, he's got a bit of a problem.
Which they make fun of in GoldenEye, which they should make fun of more often. But anyway, he runs after King to announce, no, don't wait, stop, whatever. Just before a pin in his lapel causes King and all the money to explode, ripping a huge side out of MI5 headquarters, which made me think, by the time Spectre happens, are people just like, oh, MI5 is blowing up again?
No. This is still the opening scene, by the way. We're only like 10 minutes into this movie. Feels like the second act.
Again, the cold open goes quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Is this the longest cold open? Because it does seem like a while.
It is. It's got to be up there, actually. I was thinking about this because...
Let's check what the Tribune says real quick.
I mean, GoldenEye is pretty long. Because GoldenEye, you wait until Orimov blows up and he dives after the plane and free dives in. And
yeah.
I mean, but this is... This has a lot. And then, yeah. I mean, because then we still get to Q's fishing boat... missile-loaded fishing boat, which they don't explain that.
It was for his fishing trip that he was going to take when he retired.
With torpedoes?
Yep. Yes, because he's Q.
Screw this line and tackle crap. I'm nuking me some fish.
I do imagine him going to, like, I don't know, the Everglades and doing, like grenade fishing. Oh, that's funny. But yeah, and then Bond ends up chasing... a nameless assassin dressed like, I guess, Kill Bill. She's just like Uma Thurman in like a kind of red leather suit.
Yep.
with flips and dives. And I mean, it's just, it's a very weird action pack. And then of all things to end your action fight scene with, you have a balloon, the slowest escape, like a rocket pack. I don't know. Just, we went from like high speed, like Bond essentially has a rocket boat.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
And then she's driving just a speedboat, and then they end in a hot air balloon outside of a circus.
Is that what that place is? I don't know.
It's the Millennium Dome.
And then, like, a latex tent next to it. I don't know. It looked like a circus tent. But regardless, it's just... And then rather than admit who she is or say who she's working for, she blows herself up and Bond falls 30 stories onto the tent. And we end up with the World Is Not Enough theme song.
Hey, remember Garbage, everyone? Garbage was a thing back then.
I will not talk badly about Garbage.
I'm not talking badly about them either. It's just a weird little nostalgia trip to hear them. Are they still together?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely a time capsule, but it doesn't feel out of place in a Bond movie, as opposed to the next one, Die Another Day with Madonna, thinking about it makes me kind of queasy. Because it's really like that kind of nu metal techno thing that was really popular at the early 2000s, which is just unlistenable. And this is weird and drippy. I don't know. The title sequence itself is kind of weird.
It's women being formed with oil constantly, because that's what the movie's about, is the King pipelines going through from Russia into the Caspian Sea and through the Mediterranean or something.
Yeah, it's supposed to be blah, 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 Turkey.
One thing I noticed about the title sequence, I only counted one bullet being shot.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's weird. It doesn't feel quite right.
No.
And there are women made out of oil, and Bond is kind of there, but it just feels kind of minimalistic. Maybe it's just that the last one we saw in theaters, Spectre, is the most overly dramatic, gratuitous gun shooting into women turning into drippy oil.
That thing lasted a good 20 minutes, didn't it?
And the guy's motivation, like, I know he sings in that kind of low key, but it's just like,
I just remember him really, really going to hit those high notes.
Oh man, that falsetto. That man can falsetto.
That song won an Oscar. Good God.
Yeah, it did.
It just makes you wish that Disney did better musicals.
Mm.
They haven't done.
Moana was pretty good music.
Maybe they will win. If Moana had been last year, they would have won rather than James Bond. Like, that's what I'm saying. It's not like Inside Out broke out into song very often.
I'm still pulling for Sia and the Neon Demon.
Not going to happen.
Darn. It's a good song.
She wrote practically every movie song this year.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it's a good niche to be in.
Yeah.
Adele won, too.
Yeah, for Skyfall.
It's not a great song. It sounds much more like a 1960s Bond. It's just, it's completely forgettable. This one, Garbage, you're right, did a fine job. Mm-hmm. I won't say anything bad about it.
It was standard Bond theme song.
Yeah, it was passable. And the kind of World Is Not Enough, like, chords played throughout. It was fine. The soundtrack to this one was fine. But that means, Jeremy, we're stalling because you're about to have to give us a plot synopsis to a movie that makes no sense.
After, you know, the oil guy gets killed, his daughter takes over, and she's scared that whoever killed her father is going to come after her, so basically Bond is sent to protect her, and they try and figure out who the guy is, and it's never really clear how they find out it's Renard. They have Bond looking through Electra's file. It says access denied. He goes to M. She says, nope, I'm not going to open this file for you. Then the very next scene, this is Renard. He's the terrorist.
Well, my understanding of it was that the amount he had kidnapped Electra previously, and the ransom that she was being held for was the same amount of money that had just blown King up. So they took it as a message. And apparently... apparently, that's just all you need to go on.
Well, and the other side of it is, we get another movie that happened that we're just told about, in that 009 was sent in to save her, and he ended up dead. But, like, it wasn't like, say, on Her Majesty's Secret Service or The Living Daylights, where we see the other 00 agents get killed. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, player one died, now you're player two. Which leads us, I mean, later, this is another, like, act later. It's one of the stupidest lines where M goes, he's my best agent, but I would never tell him that. And you're just like, come on, man. Like, you're supposed to hate each other, kind of. Because Q very much hates James Bond movie. In his final appearance, Desmond Llewellyn. Yep. Anyway, sorry, Jeremy, we cut you off. Where do we go from here?
Okay, so...
sorry. I'm going to keep throwing you under this bus.
Yeah, so Bond goes to visit the pipeline where Elektra has to calm the locals because, hey, you know, they're building the pipeline through their village, which is not cool. And they say, sure, we'll divert it, whatever. And Bond and Elektra go to survey some of the land, and that's when they get attacked by... How would I describe them? Para-scooter?
They gave the name at one point, but I cannot remember what they said.
They're like an electric sled?
It's like they're snowmobiles with parachutes.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then there's skiers. Yeah. And this is to what Jeremy was saying earlier, which may or may not actually be on this recording. But this movie has a lot of weird fan service. And as much as anyone, you know, on Her Majesty's Secret Service, like... Skiing, Bond and skiing goes together very well. For me, it's very kind of classy James Bond gentleman spy stuff. Like, he should be athletic. He should... In the next movie, he does fencing. I have nothing wrong with him being a fencer. But this is literally like, let's do the Bond tick box. He can be on water. He can be in the air. He can be in the sky. Like, he can fall from the heavens and be fine. Yeah. He has sex to get a clear medical record.
Well, he wasn't fine from that drop on the Millennium Dome. He sprained his shoulder.
Yeah, that factors in so rarely that it makes you wonder why they bothered.
More than once, so it at least they at least remembered that it happened.
Check off shoulder injury.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like, you know, the Wolverine where he loses his power and has to get it back. It's, you know, my shoulder's messed up.
Well, or if he had to play hurt constantly. You know, like he tried to make a shot but couldn't because he hurt his shooting arm or anything.
My shooting arm! They took my shooting arm!
Literally anything. If this movie gave us literally anything. And again, like Jeremy was saying, I don't hate this movie as much as I thought I would. It's so forgettable. So the natives are restless. And we end up saying, in a contrived plot premise, we need to go skiing for some reason to observe.
Check out the pipeline, I believe, is the reason they gave.
Yeah. But rather than just look at it from a helicopter, we have to ski down, just as ski ninjas show up and try to kill them with ski ninjas.
Well, can I go ahead and give away the big twist? Do you care?
No, I don't, guys. It's a 20-year-old movie.
Elektra's the villain, everyone.
Dun, dun, dun.
So wasn't the whole thing is that she made Bond ski and set the whole thing up to try and kill him?
She tried to. She tried to kill him, like, 6 times. And, in fact, it's even presented to us. And if you know what the twist is, of course we know what the twist is. You see it. Because during this whole action sequence, she just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And then shows back up at the end with her giant fuzzy hat. Meanwhile, Bond is mildly sweaty. They gave Pierce Brosnan a touch of gray, which is kind of cute. anyway. But yeah, so Pierce Brosnan here is Bond. And he's chasing her down the hill, and they get attacked by... whatever. And we have our one Q scene right before this and right after this. We end up with Q saying, Mr. Bond, I've taught you 2 things. 1, never let them see you bleed. And 2, always have an escape plan. And then he leaves Movie Town, and then we never have Q again. He dies.
We get a replacement with R, who's John Cleese and is so underwritten.
Hey, gotta pay them bills.
Well, I was just expecting, you know, when if he, like, messed up equipment for John Cleese to go into full Fawlty Towers, like, you yuts!
Or anything. He just automatically goes into asshole Q mode to make fun of Bond after getting his own coat stuck in the car. And at this point, James Bond is just so used to people being schmucks to him that he just takes it. Because M is mean to him for no reason. Like, and it's not even like his feelings should be hurt. No, they're just like, oh, Bond, you... You know, like, they just yell at him.
Say
constantly.
What you want, buddy. I'm the one getting my tip wet tonight.
Yeah, right? I can't. Regardless, M gets too involved because she Was boning King? I don't know.
She had King went to her to try and rescue Elektra, but M essentially used the fact that she was kidnapped to try and bait the Renard and the terrorists that kidnapped her in order to take them out without really caring about the girl. So she used her as bait.
Yeah, but how do you have the head of MI6 on speed dial?
They'd gone to Cambridge or something.
Something like that.
Like they had this weird vibe. Like when Bond comes into the room, like they're sitting on the desk next to each other, like drinking, it's like kind of romantic.
Well, did anybody else get this weird feeling when she said this line describing the whole situation about Elektra, where she's like, "I ignored all my instincts as a mother." It's like, did she just say she's Elektra's mom?
There's a lot, like, if there was this is, I think, one of the shortest Bond movies. It's like a tight hour and 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
Nice. It was about two hours.
It was 2 hours.
But apparently, looking on IMDb, the initial cut, like, shown to the press or whatever, was half hour longer.
Oh, wow.
So
that's what I'm thinking. Like, there could be more here. Like, they have a relationship, they have something, because it's really, like you said, it's an odd idea that she would send 009 before whatever that we don't see, and that, like, there's a lot here that's kind of thrown away in dialogue.
Yeah. We need one of our agents to get killed. Let's not send 007 this time.
Just, like, I like the idea that there's, like, a Rolodex. Like, what numbers can we reissue? Oh, yeah. 007 again. Like, I just hope it's that, and that Denise Richard didn't have 30 minutes more.
Oh, God.
Because Daniel said she wasn't bad. I will say that she's the worst actress.
Her character, I guess, she's not as bad as people say she is. She's not like the Jar Jar Binks level of annoyance.
No, she's bad.
She's not that good, but she's not like this grating, terrible thing.
See, I was keeping time as I watched this. She appears not until almost halfway into the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm like watching this, I'm thinking, wow, this is actually going pretty smoothly. And then she shows up and it all comes to a screeching halt.
The movie stops dead. Yeah. She stops the movie dead.
Yeah. She's not good. I do want to emphasize that. She's not good, but I wouldn't say she kills the movie. She's just sort of a forgettable Bond girl.
Well, the thing that bothered me is she's not needed at all. I think it's much more intriguing if Bond has the woman that he's interested the whole time in King, right? And then she betrays him the whole time, kind of like what they did at the end of Casino Royale, but not, you know, but much more blunt. I don't know. I just think that's neat, because otherwise it's really, she's completely forgettable. I'm trying to see if there's any IMDb lines. Christmas Jones.
I know, "Are you just here for a glimmer" is one. Or I will try and do it in her voice. "Are you just here for a glimmer?"
James Bond, "I've always wanted to have Christmas in Turkey. Dr. Christmas Jones. Was that a Christmas joke?" Bond, "From me? No, never." Christmas Jones, "It is time to unwrap your present."
Line reading application deployed. Reading line now.
You don't want to get someone from Baywatch to do anything. Mm. Well, I mean,
acting. Well, anything?
Acting.
Okay.
Although, wasn't Pamela Anderson on Home Improvement? Wasn't she the Tool Time girl for like 2 years? Yeah. Although, that might have been before she was on Baywatch.
Yeah.
It's
funny because it's such a forgettable movie, and everyone remembers
how bad she was. I love how many tangents were going off because the movie's kind of forgettable.
Well, it's just the movie. If you're trying to follow the plot of a Bond movie, it's a fool's errand anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But this one takes one of the most radical turns of any, like, because then there's nuclear weapons for no reason, and
yeah, that came out of nowhere.
And like, the nuclear weapons still have to do something with like the oil trade, because they want to blow up Istanbul, because then oil can't go through Istanbul, and
theirs will be the only pipeline that can, so they'll get rich.
I figure there's other ways to do that, and besides blowing up a major city.
Well, but that's,
you know, like bribe the officials in Istanbul, maybe.
Well, I was going to say, what would be interesting is if there was a more political coup. Like, they assassinate the prime minister, and they hope that the political chaos will make their pipeline. Like,
well, what I gathered is In the ridiculous sequence where Bond and Jones are disarming the bomb in the pipeline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I have to stop it.
Yeah, so I think the whole point of that was the pipeline would explode, making it look like a terrorist attack. So Istanbul would be bombed in return.
Right.
Kind of, you know, masking the real situation.
Well, why didn't they just steal the bomb then and plant it in Istanbul? Why did they steal half the plutonium and steal the nuclear submarine and shove the plutonium to cause a meltdown in there?
I don't know about
There's so many different plots that tie together here, and it's not even like a normal Bond movie where there's like a false flag or something. This one really, this is the most tentative Bond, like tenuative, whatever. This is such a weak link.
Can we talk about Renard for a bit, the main villain?
You want a Bond with a villain with a quirk? He's got a quirk. Yeah.
Well, first and foremost, it's a quirk that makes no sense. The whole thing is that the bullet in his head. By the way, he's played by Robbie Carlyle from Trainspotting and Angela's Ashes. And what else has he been in, Jeremy?
He's
been in a lot of stuff. He was in 28 Weeks Later.
Full Monty.
Oh, yeah, he was in Full Monty. Yeah.
I think he did a good job.
He's perfectly fine. Renard is fine. He's a good villain. He has a quirk.
There's a bullet in his head that means his nervous system doesn't work, so he can't feel pain.
And they like to show that off by him picking up, like, steaming hot rocks. And
welcome to the Devil's Breath, where people pilgrimage to hold the scalding rocks as they pray to test their devotion. I hope
that's a real place.
I am Russian. Moose and Squirrel. Yeah. Putin has mighty pecs.
Yeah, no, and he's... Oh, he's going to be in the other Trainspotting sequel.
Oh, of course he is.
T2.
Trainspotting Judgment Day?
Yeah, exactly. and then he punches through glass. They like to keep reminding us that he doesn't feel pain. He says that a lot.
So what was his whole thing? I think they just said he was an anarchist, but they never really delved into his motivation.
I think he's a tool. Like a tool of Elektra.
I wanted to say they mentioned somewhere he was a mercenary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, basically. I mean, and I think that he was someone who was for hire, and then recently he went off the rails, and that has a lot to do with Elektra's plan. Mm-hmm, and I think that was on the cutting room floor of the 30 minutes they removed from this movie.
Now, here's the biggest thing about him that bothered me. His nervous system doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. But he and Elektra have what's implied to be a sex scene late in the movie. How does that work?
Well, it's... One of the things I don't know if this was something Carlyle added in, but at the end, you know, when everything's going down, like, they kiss, and he kind of has this reaction like, damn it, this is doing nothing for me.
Oh,
yeah.
So he gets pissed off by that, which motivates him to, you know, kill people.
Yeah,
But then he gasps audibly when, you know, he gets that rod lodged in his stomach.
I think that was more like getting the wind knocked out of him because he gets a large bullet-shaped piece of uranium lodged through his stomach.
Oh, the bad guy dies, by the way, in a Bond movie, so spoilers.
This movie is... Also, if you ask me how they went from Istanbul to being underwater in a submarine, that's something, man. Mm. I wonder what movie motivated... Is this like Youth 571 ending up in a Bond movie? Because this is like the weirdest submarine scene. They're in the submarine for all of 10 minutes.
Maybe.
And it has like 5 people on board.
Yeah. Skeleton crew.
They just need to feed them some poisoned food and that's it.
Yeah. Which pisses off Robbie Coltrane because the captain is a very dear friend of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Robbie Coltrane, man, he's so good, and he's so under... He is actually utilized more in this movie than in GoldenEye.
Yeah, one scene in GoldenEye, and here he's all...
He's
in a bunch.
He frees Bond when he's in the chair.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, using an antique rifle, the longest...
His cane gun.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. And, not that it did much.
I don't know. One of the best parts of the movie, and he dies.
Aw, yeah.
Well, I mean, it just lets you know that... I don't know who directed this particular Bond. I should have looked that up.
According to the Tribune,
Michael Apted.
Yes.
Who's that?
Gorillas in the Mist.
Wait, really?
Coal Miner's Daughter. The Up series.
Wait, the Up series?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
No, I'm checking. I'm checking the Tribune on that.
No, you're right. And this is Purvis and Wade too. And he produced everything.
Oh my God, he did do the Up series.
Yeah.
So does that mean Morgan Spurlock is going to do the next Bond movie?
Bond fights McDonald's.
God.
Oh. He also did Nell, if anybody remembers that movie.
He sure did.
Yeah.
I'm just looking. 42 up. Yeah, man. Yeah. 49 up.
Amazing. 35 up.
Is it bad that I haven't seen any of the Up series because I'm waiting for Apted to die before? Because, you know, if I see them all, then a couple of years later, damn it, they made another one.
I'll wait for the
I've only seen one of them. I think it was 56 Up.
Yeah. I'll wait for the Documentary Now version.
Oh.
I like Documentary Now a lot. He did the Crossroads TV show. I could just keep listing shit. It's worthless. I don't know. It's a weird movie done by Weird. I do like the idea that they just pick someone random to do Bond.
You're British and you've directed stuff. Yeah. Have at it.
I'm trying to figure out how to assemble this movie because it does feel like a mishmash.
Well, my understanding about the submarine you were asking is Elektra had, and there's a casino scene, because of course there's a casino scene featuring a game of gamble. And this game of gamble is, I forget which number it is, but it's the one that involves cards. Is that
it's literally high card, yeah, I think.
Yes, it is literally high card, where Elektra comes in and places a $1 million bet at the casino run by Robbie Coltrane.
Which, if no one noticed, it's called L'Or Noir, meaning black gold, as in oil. Oh, look how smart they were.
And Bond,
Texas tea.
And the stupidest thing about this is when they arrive in the casino, she has $1 million credit because her father had $1 million credit. And they play one hand of high card for $1 million. And she loses because whatever. And that's it. Then she leaves. She's done playing her game of gamble. And the best part about that is Bond doesn't bat an eye. And then at the end of the movie, that's important. I'm like, you could have brought that up earlier. It's not subtle.
Yeah.
It's not like they played for a week and she started taking hands at blackjack, which is essentially Casino Royale. Like, that's they made the whole third act Texas Hold'em and they made it dramatic. This is literally one hand of gamble. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Well,
might
it's
have been
dumb.
Playing Chutes of Ladders.
It's dumb because it's a payoff. She was bribing him to get access to the submarines because he's got connections with the Russian Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the submarine comes into play.
But it doesn't because he still kills everyone. I don't know. They overthink some scenes and then they don't think about other things enough.
Yeah.
I do like the idea though, like it took him 3 times because she kept accidentally losing at high card or winning at high card and like the house lost $3 million. Oh, that's funny. We also don't get a lot of weird Bond. Although, the best Bond thing we get is he shows up at the casino first, and he says he wants to see Valentin.
Yeah, because of that. He skied onto the parachute that one of the jet ski parachute troop was flying.
Oh, that was...
And somehow, in the midst of all that, he pulled off a piece of the parachute which had the logo of the Russian nuclear...
group or something.
Was the Russian Nuclear Security Agency or something, so... He went to Valentin to...
You know, every one of those skiers exploded, but somehow that handkerchief came out all spick and span.
The best part of that skiing scene is when the ski-doo goes right off the thing and then starts to fall, and then a parachute opens up and Bond shits himself, though. Because Bond is just like, oh no, and starts skiing again. That was great. Anyway, but yeah, so we can advance a little bit, but Valentin... Bond has x-ray specs because why not?
And he uses them to look at women's underwear because why not?
And he goes to the bar to order a martini and to see Valentin. And the guy goes, you're not going to get to see Valentin. He goes, I'm going to see Valentin. And he orders the martini, punches the guy in the face, takes his knife out, put the knife through his tie, pulls his gun out and says, I'm seeing Valentin. That's pretty good. That was a pretty good scene. He then drinks the martini before Valentin offers him another drink because Bond drinks constantly in this movie. But yeah, then the movie just gets more and more complicated. I don't know.
Oh, and Valentin's not a Russian mobster anymore, but a caviar salesman is what I think he says he is. I'm a legitimate businessman now.
Mm. And he owns that casino that they're in. So. Yes. I don't know.
I wonder what happened to Minnie Driver, though, because she's not his girlfriend in this one.
That would have been great if she...
That would have been amazing if she was still there.
If they, walked by the main stage and she was still brokenly trying to sing Blues Brothers songs.
That would have been great.
Born in Chicago. Mm. Born in Chicago. I don't know. That would have been...
Ride him in raw hide.
Completely forgettable movie. I mean, like, what else do we need to bring up? This is Purvis and Wade. They had another movie that was going to come out after this, and then they couldn't sell it, so it became the Mr. Bean movie, or Johnny English.
Ah, yes.
But yeah, I don't know. Then Bond, then...
Well, we should get to the betrayal, at least, the big second act twist.
Okay, so Bond ends up tricking everyone, knocking some people unconscious, and ending up figuring out this is all nuclear-related. He tracks Renard to a nuclear facility where we run into Christmas Jones after he steals an ID, etc. Okay. Christmas Jones, of course, being Denise Richards, ruins everything.
Yep.
She realizes Bond is not who he says he is because he is not a 65-year-old balding man. He is James Bond, who is a 55-year-old man with gray hair. Then Renard tricks everyone, steals the nuclear weapon that Bond said they were going to, and escapes after blowing up an entire underground nuclear facility, apparently, which isn't really explained.
Yeah.
Well, Renard has the...
He's stealing the plutonium.
He has, like, a detonator tied to the elevator, so when it goes up, it trips it. And I'm like, wow, this is some Saw-level stuff right there.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is. And
Rumpelstiltskin is hardcore, man.
Mm-hmm. Well... Yeah, he's in once, right?
Yes, he is.
Then they end up back at like a headquarters somewhere, and it's specifically King headquarters.
Scotland.
Right? In Scotland. Mm-hmm. No.
It was Scotland. Because yep. There's bagpipes, so you know it's Scotland.
A bagpipe machine gun.
That's right.
And they're in this control center thing, trying to figure out where the nuclear weapon has gone because they took out the tracking chip. And then they're watching Alexa King's pipeline and notice there's a blockage,
mm-hmm.
right? This is where the betrayal happens. Bond and Christmas Jones for some reason.
So just to recap, there's blockage in Alexa King's pipeline.
Whackity smackity doo. This movie lost money, by the way.
It did?
The domestic gross was... Okay, it cost $135 million. The domestic gross was only $126.
Wasn't it the highest grossing Bond film of the 20th century, yeah. According to the Tribune?
It made a good amount overseas.
Yeah.
Oh, must have, yeah. Oh, there we go. $360 million world.
Mm-hmm.
That's not great. Yeah. It tripled its budget. If I made $300 million, I guess I'd be happy too.
Yeah.
but yeah, so they realize there's a blockage. And because there's a blockage, Bond decides that he should be there, I guess. And so Christmas Jones and him go to try to disable the bomb on this. It's like a gyroscopic tube cleaner. It's a roto-rooter for a pipeline.
Yeah.
And that just comes back to me right now. That's probably a reference to Diamonds Are Forever, where that he's in the pipe and that machine comes to try and electrocute him.
Yeah, no, it's... And yeah. It's the most... This is Purvis and Wade's second script, and it feels very much like a bunch of fanboys wrote it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, then they decide to let the bomb blow up instead of not, because they could have disabled it,
mm-hmm.
but someone had stripped the screws, whatever, I don't know.
Well, they found out that there was only half the plutonium they stole in the bomb, so it wasn't enough to go nuclear, so they realized that they were getting conned,
mm-hmm.
or something.
And in so being conned, Bond lets the thing explode, but they take out the nuclear material.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they think Bond and Christmas Jones are dead for all of 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's enough time for Electric King to flip out, turn a gun on M, and kidnap M for the first time.
Now, the weird thing about that is... You know, Electra calls, says, hey, M, I want you here for protection. And Bond act is, for probably one of the few times ever, the responsible adult and says, M, I don't think you should go. And M is like, screw you, Bond, I'm going.
And it makes no sense. Because, like, she has reamed him every single time for doing irresponsible things. Yeah. And she is the most irresponsible person in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over and over again. Because I don't know why. Maybe she does actually feel guilty about ruining mm-hmm. this woman's life.
I really do think that there's something deeper going on, and mm-hmm. I'm just going to throw this out there. Electra's M's daughter, and Electra doesn't know it. Oh, no, wait, that can't be, because she says that her mom's family owned the oil she inherited. Never mind. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I wish there was more to it, because of all the things, the story with M is much more interesting than what happens for most of it. And we get no payoff.
Well, the scene with Robbie Carlyle and Judi Dench was great when he's talking about how she can watch her time tick away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they literally just put a clock there, which she steals for some reason. Oh, we figure out why later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a GPS.
She had a GPS card in her pocket and needed the
battery.
The battery.
Yeah. Which also pays off, I guess. That's good. They do good things with it. I don't know. It's at this point the movie, if you're trying to follow the plot of the movie, it just goes to crap.
Yeah.
Because Bond starts knowing things he should not know.
And Elektra starts knowing things she shouldn't know.
And she, now being the full villain, just goes completely nuts.
Yeah.
Yep.
What do you guys want to say? Like,
in a fun way, at times the torture scene with the chair that would snap Bond's neck was pretty good.
Yeah, that was like one of the few things. It's like, okay, let's see what we can add to this.
Yeah.
When I was a kid and I saw like these movies, and then didn't watch them for a while, I was convinced that was in GoldenEye and it was Xenia who did that to him, because she seems much more the type until the last act of this movie.
That took a dramatically different turn. I was going to ask, Nick, did seeing Sophie Marceau in that dress make you a man?
Oh, well, no. That whole missing part of her ear thing was weird, too.
Well, yeah, she cut it off for something, right?
To make her kidnapping look more convincing.
Ah.
But it's just, it's weird. I am curious, though, why, because I have the 50th anniversary box set. Mm-hmm. Why they never released director's cuts for Bond movies anyway. Mm. But what they could have cut out in 32 minutes. I'm looking at this now, like the press screening was 160 minutes, which is a very long Bond movie for the time.
I heard the big thing was the boat chase. A lot of that got cut out from the beginning.
How could that have been longer?
Apparently it was supremely long originally.
It was probably a minute or two longer than it needed to be.
Well, then if that's true, that's a good cut to the movie. But yeah. I just can't imagine sitting through 160 minutes of nothing then. Like, 20 minutes more of that boat chase would have been great. And a second music video at the end. PG-13 for intense sequences of action, violence, and innuendos. MPAA can go fuck themselves.
Innuendos? Ooh.
But, I mean, okay, so the movie ends up going completely nuts. At this point, M is in Istanbul because they're going to nuke Istanbul and they want her to watch the destruction for whatever reason. and they have this whole setup where Bond shows up somehow. How does Bond know where to go? The GPS.
Probably the GPS.
The GPS.
Yeah.
And then he ends up in the house with Robbie Coltrane. Oh, this is after Robbie's caviar factory gets chopped up with a buzzsaw.
Yeah.
It was those buzzsaw and a helicopter that they were using to cut trees mm-hmm. by the pipeline, but now it's going after Robbie Coltrane.
Which leads to the question, does that mean that someone was flying across the countryside with the buzzsaw hanging at the bottom of the
yes.
helicopter? Because
the answer
they're
is
nowhere
yes.
near. Yeah. Like, fly more casually. We have a chainsaw. Meanwhile, the guy from Texas Chainsaw Massacre is just getting a huge erection as a helicopter flies. Leatherface has an erection.
Ew.
You're welcome, yeah.
Ew.
Yeah, but if it's Leatherface, would he have someone else's skin over his dick?
Oh.
I can't make his gun
roll. Oh, they kind of...
They made a Swedish remake of that movie. The originals are so much fun, though.
The originals are great.
But yeah, no, and so they're in the caviar factory, which is the closest we actually see to oil, because that's really gross. Yeah. Robbie Coltrane ends
up he's drowning in caviar almost at one point.
Which is a good way for a rich person to go, let's be honest.
But a Russian should die in caviar or vodka. I would say it's pretty good.
So or that's... borscht.
Or borscht. He's like, it's dying me red. I don't know. And then we end up getting to the submarine at the last... No, then we end up going to Istanbul, mm-hmm. because Robbie Coltrane sees the hat of his buddy, realizes that the
they've all been poisoned.
They've all something's gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Elektra shoots him once, and then out of his cane gun, he frees Bond out of the sex chair.
That is such a badass scene before him with Robbie Coltrane, this huge man in a suit holding these two submachine guns, just going around killing everyone.
We get someone else who's a badass in this movie than Bond, because Christmas Jones is in. Oh no, someone with a gun. And Robbie Coltrane is just like, woman, let me act. And he is shooting the hell out of people. It's great, actually. But then we have the torture scene Daniel alluded to earlier. And Electric King, dies there. Bond tries to... Robbie Coltrane shoots his, manacle so Bond can get his hand loose. Break out. Electric King tries to make a getaway right as he gets freeze M just so M can see him shoot Electric King dead. Yeah, that kind of wraps it up. And frankly, Daniel brings it up. I mean, we were talking about whether or not Christmas Joan is important to the plot, which she is not.
She's not.
But it's this. The woman dies too early otherwise. So I guess it's that or M... and Bond hook up at the end, which would be a very interesting twist for this movie.
Ooh. Well, no, she just sees the that thermal satellite camera and then sees that it's getting redder where Bond is.
You. It appears he's trying re-entry.
And a couple minutes later, there will be a spot of white.
Ew.
Ew.
Ew. He seems to be cooling off quicker than she is. She seems upset. She's getting red again.
The actual joke, which makes no sense now, is must be a premature form of the Millennium Bug, which is what John Cleese ends the movie with.
And Bond ends with, I think literally the last line we hear is, I thought Christmas only came once a year.
Yep.
Which is awful. 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 Which literally must have been what Purvis and Wade wrote first,
mm-hmm.
thought it was a funny line, and then...
Did you work backwards from there?
Yeah, I mean, that was her name. What could we call her? Booby McBoob-Boob, or Booby McBoatface, or whatever.
Booby McBoatface.
And I love how they just keep putting Dr. Jones, because she's Dr. Jones, like Indiana Jones is the whole time.
And she's dressed up like Laura Croft in the first scene she's in.
And it's useless. Yeah. She's wearing Doc Martin boots and shorts and a tank top. She looks like Laura Croft.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the Indiana Jones thing. It's all worthless. It's all so worthless. Sigh. We end up on a submarine.
Yes.
Bond in a suit swims to a submarine and happens to open the hatch right before it goes down. Christmas Jones is there. We don't. How does she get on the submarine?
He takes her on there?
But he gets on...
No, wait. Yeah. She's kidnapped, Renard has her loaded on for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's standard Bond plot problem. He could have just shot her dead, but he decides not to. Whatever. Then we end up with this weird fight scene where Bond ruins everything. He's a naval officer. He shouldn't accidentally crash the submarine into the bottom of the ocean, but he does.
Yeah, how does he know... How does he not know how to make the sub go up instead of down?
Well,
isn't that the whole point? Is that he wanted it to go down so that...
No, he wanted it to go up because if it surfaces, then spy satellites will be able to find them.
Ah.
Well, and B, or two, as I hold up two fingers... He knows what buttons to hit to flood various chambers and empty various chambers so that he can swim outside the cabin through the sun. Like, he knows everything about the sub except for what the plot needs him to look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Which is terrible. You can make Bond not be out of his element or in his element, but he can't be both within a scene.
Yeah, they should have done the cliche of, he shoots someone who then falls over the lever.
Yeah.
That putting it in the wrong direction.
Right, or Renard is somewhere else in the ship controlling it secondarily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or anything.
Yeah.
Rather than his own incompetence and brilliance in the same scene. Because Bond is notorious for knowing everything.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one time knowing something would have been more useful than what he does.
Yeah.
And the movie, the climax of the movie is embarrassing. However, other than that, there's a lot of weird gyroscopic shots, which I'm sure cost them a lot of money, where they took a cabin of a submarine and tilted it, so they're falling!
This would have been the perfect place for a Q breath mask, but he doesn't have one.
This would have been this movie had very few gadgets other than the jacket that turns into an avalanche prevention.
Yeah, the grappling hook in the wristwatch, and hadn't that been done before? That was done in Diamonds Are Forever too.
Well, the car doesn't even do anything. It gets sliced in half by that buzzsaw. Yeah, but does he ever use it?
Yep. Once.
Okay.
I will say, though, of all movies to emulate, Diamonds Are Forever is an interesting choice because it's a very silly movie.
Oh, you know that's one of my favorites.
No, I know it's one of your favorites, and it's one of mine, too, but it's not Pierce Brosnan. Like, he's not a silly Bond, and that's one of the silliest ones that there are.
Yeah.
It's almost a Roger Moore movie coming out of Sean Connery, and I think it's really good. I mean, Bambi and Thumper are two of the best hench people ever.
Yes.
And yet, the movie, half of Bond's quips are to himself. This is full serial killer Bond. Because, like, the guy goes plummeting off the mountain and he makes a quip to no one and laughs at his own quip. Like, this is like this is American Psycho material.
The only
like
time
he's bathing in blood. Like,
the only time he tries. Do you think Bond can get a table at Dorsey?
Yes, because he's the world's most famous spy. Because everyone knows James Bond by name in this movie.
Dorsey or Dorcia's? No, Dorcia. I forget. Dorcia, thank you.
I was willing to let it go, but you're wrong, Daniel.
Yes, I know. Well, if I didn't say something now, you know you'd get emails, Nick, and I did not want to burden you with emails.
I was just hoping someone would actually write in. but yeah, no, so this is when the movie kind of goes a little bit, I guess, like this is the climax. Like Renard freaks out because he says that Elektra's been killed. And
liar!
And he goes into beast mode, man. He goes berserker. And Bond is...
He kicks Bond's ass.
He does. And had Christmas Jones not plotted, and there was a plot device that happened. She nearly kills him, by the way. Her cabin starts slightly filling with water, and then she gets taken away by the undertow. And so she doesn't end up draining Bond's cabin of water.
Well, that's
and
not
he's
her
literally
fault.
Checking his watch as he is suffocating to death because he's English, I guess.
Oh, dearie me. I was supposed to suffocate 10 seconds ago. This is, so frightfully inconvenient.
Exactly. Which just tickles me to no end. But yes, she bravely, last minute, pulls just in time to drain the swamp. And saves Bond. We don't know what happens to her, other than she survives eventually. We don't know how she survives the fact that her room has filled with water.
Bond lets her out.
Yeah. That's right, he does.
I must let you out, I haven't fucked you yet.
Yeah.
In perfect Sean Connery voice, too. It was a weird scene with Pierce Brosnan doing that.
Yeah. Well, he does lose his accent at one point. In the nuclear, where they're digging the radioactive material out of the ground and we first meet Christmas Jones, he's Welsh, right? Is he Welsh?
I thought he was Irish.
Irish, yeah. Yeah, he says, my name is Bond, James Bond, but he goes from his English accent to his Irish voice for a bit, and it's kind of, it's noticeable, this one. Not as much as in Die Another Day, where he just gives up on everything, which is funny. what else? What do you got? I mean, at this point, Renard is trying to, essentially, using a pencil sharpener, they have turned the nuclear material, which is weapons grade, into the kind of rod that they would use in the
At a rave.
to use in the nuclear sub, but it's the wrong kind of fissile material, so it would cause the sub to explode, effectively.
Yeah.
And then it would be clear that the Russians have a nuclear sub in the... Caspian? I don't know what the point of this is.
Yeah, that was to blow up Istanbul.
It was to blow up Istanbul and make it look like an accident, I guess, or an accidental meltdown on the sub.
Yeah.
And so that the Russians get blamed, etc., and it would make the phosphorus soil irradiated for a million billion years so that Bond could never consummate his relationship or whatever. And because of that, Renard is trying to blow up the sub with him on board to sacrifice everything for Elektra King, but King is dead now, so... He is conflicted, but he goes into beast mode instead.
And he still does it, but apparently as he's shoving that giant rod into the reactor, which, I don't know, I guess that symbolizes the decay of the oil industry or something.
whoa, Eisenstein, there's nothing metaphorical about sticking a tube into a tunnel.
Hitchcock taught me wrong.
Yeah, thanks, Truffaut, yeah.
Anyway, some... pressure tube gets loose, and so Bond reconnects it and then presses a button, and it comes flying back into Renard's gut and impales him and kills him.
Yeah. And that's the end of our villain. Mm-hmm. Bond escapes with Christmas Jones through a life raft, and then using infrared, we see him having sex.
Yep. And that's the end of the movie, with a big James Bond will return at the end.
But it doesn't say for what, which is weird, because they often say Bond will return. If they say Bond will return, they usually say the movie title. I wonder if they didn't think he would return after this.
I just think they probably didn't have titles at this point, because all the Ian Fleming novels were used up.
Well, and was this a big lawsuit year? I don't remember.
No.
Oh, with Kevin McClory?
No, that was GoldenEye. And then there wasn't another one until recently. I don't know. It was just weird, because it does. Just in white font on a black screen, Bond will return. This movie is not as bad as I remembered it. Mm-hmm. And there are some genuinely good scenes. I think the cold open is interesting. Mm-hmm. I think the plot twist is interesting. But there's just so much that they added, like Jeremy was saying, to make it feel like a more vintage Bond, or to make it have fan service when it didn't need fan service. Bond is something that doesn't need fan service. It's a known quantity. People who've never seen Bond movies know what a Bond movie is. Stop it. They didn't even do the fun kind. Like, there wasn't even an Aston Martin.
Yeah.
Nope. He didn't have his Omega, like,
Seamaster.
Well,
the Brosnan years were the BMW years.
But still, like, even the first Brosnan, before he got his, like, his mission car, he had his cool car. I do appreciate that they let him look a little older.
Mm-hmm.
He has the world's largest head. I notice this every single time. Especially when he has that collar on, his jawline is just jutting out like Jay Leno in a bad...
And his, whenever he slicks his hair back, that's just prominent forehead right there. You could project the movie on that forehead.
It was never clearer than on the skiing scene, because she has on a big Russian black fur cap.
Mm-hmm.
And she jumps out of the helicopter. And then next is his hair slicked back and foofy jumping out after her. I'm like, that's the director is having fun here, because his hair is as floofy as her big Russian fur hat. I don't know what to make of this movie. It's not as like...
It's not terrible.
Did you watch Tomorrow Never Dies? I know you were not on the podcast. Did either of you?
I've seen it before, yeah.
I saw it when it came out, and it was like, yeah, I don't need to see this again.
I liked the Rupert Murdoch as a Camp Bond villain.
I mean, for those of you who are listening in, I want you to write in. Like, I'll put a poll on the screen when you guys watch this, whether or not this one was better or worse than Tomorrow Never Dies, because Tomorrow Never Dies is copy and paste of GoldenEye with different stakes, but like they have the tech guy, even played by a magician who doesn't get to do any magic.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You know, it just whatever. Straight gun fire in the background, I guess. But yeah, and this movie is all fan service, but these two middle Bond movies are, I don't want to say mediocre or middling, they're just middle of the road. They're kind of meh.
They're just forgettable.
Yeah.
I think go ahead, please.
We get both ends of the spectrum, and with GoldenEye we get really great, and then with Die Another Day we get not so great.
But I think Die Another Day was so bad, it's one that people saw because it was so bad it was kind of entertaining. Like, it wasn't even Diamonds Are Forever, which is, I think, intentionally funny. This one is, like, Die Another Day is unintentionally funny. Like, because Bond still is taking it deadly serious, and then Halle Berry shows up, proving once again she does not deserve her Oscar.
Ooh. Shots fired, Miss Barry.
But the thing is, you know, we'll get there when we get there. We'll talk about that movie. Plenty. But there's a reason
plenty
why...
Plenty O'Toole.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a reason why We Hate Movies could do an episode on it. Because it is... It's just crap, man. Like, even people who like Bond movies, like... It's the one that people who don't like Bond movies like.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. This movie is a perfect Sunday afternoon movie.
Yeah, it's a good hangover movie. Especially if you've seen it before and know what's happening, it'll distract you.
I mean, like any Bond movie, it doesn't really matter where you jump in the plot, because the plot doesn't matter. But this one has very little talky talk. Like, you know, there's mostly things happening. Some even good set pieces. Just a lot of nothingness. So little this movie matters, man. It's really just a complete waste. Any final thoughts, guys?
Yeah, it's a fairly forgettable movie. I mean, pretty much everything is a callback to previous Bond movies. everyone gives it their all, and just switch out Denise Richards with anyone.
A plank of wood.
Yeah, and it would be decent all around. There's just not much going for it.
Well, and the worst part is she isn't even necessary. Like, no. Yeah. And I mean, to your point, Pierce Brosnan is like a kid who dressed up like James Bond for Halloween in the 70s. Like, he so much wants to be a good Bond, but every step of the way they hose him in these movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it would have almost been better if he had been in the Mission Impossible movies instead of Tom Cruise.
Because, or if they just made a Remington Steele movie or something.
Or if, like, because in this era, like, isn't this the same year? What was that heist movie that he's in?
The Thomas Crown Affair?
Isn't that the same era?
Same year.
Well, that's a much better Bond-like movie.
Yeah.
You know, there's gadgets, there's, like, I mean,
Taylor of Panama.
I've never seen it.
The Matador is, like, 2 years later.
Oh, yeah. The Matador is great. Like, but, that movie.
But, like, this kind of grizzled hitman type guy, like, because I believe him as, you know, a latter-day, like, Bond, like, a Bond who is retired, who's just like, I'm going to keep doing this for money because I've worked my ass off for you guys for too long. You don't treat me right. Like, everyone hates him. This is literally, like, it becomes the fantasy of everyone in high school who had a shitty time in high school and they come back being better than you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Bond's like, you know what? Now I'm just a hitman for hire and your 00 agents can't touch me. Fuck off. Like, that'd have been great. But instead, the one job he wanted, he gets and it's a disaster.
Yeah. Except for the first one, yeah.
Which I think
he hasn't even said in interviews. Like, I remember every day about being in GoldenEye, but then the other three are just complete slog. I can't even remember doing them.
Well, and it's so funny because there was a documentary that came out for the 50th where they all, even Daniel Craig's like, these are good, but when I'm done, I'm glad I'm going to be done. Because, mm-hmm. you know, this is a moment to be Pierce is the only one who's like, I wish I had more. I wish I did. Like, it's just so sad, man. Like,
yeah.
You know,
he was a great Bond. He was just giving shit.
Yeah, he was.
And he looked like Bond.
Yeah.
You draw a cartoon of Bond and he's Vaughn. Like, it's just. And I mean a cartoon because he has a huge head. But I don't know. It's just in the end. Because I think in the next movie, he doesn't waste a bullet. I think he kills more people than he shoots. Like, than he fires gun. Like, it's just... We'll and he has an invisible car, and the other car also turns invisible. Like...
Oh, God.
That's going to be one for the ages. But anyway, I guess Mission Briefing will return next month with Die Another Day.
Good luck with that one.
And the end of the Brosnan era before we end up with what I think is one of the best ones, which is Casino Royale.
Amen.
Which might be the best Bond that is a movie, if not the best Bond movie. It's the best movie. Although we'll get there when we get there.
Have to get through Die Another Day first.
We'll die then. So tune in next time, guys. Bye. Thanks.
Mission Briefing and Myopia Defend Your Childhood are produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It's hosted and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is sampled from Monty Norman's James Bond theme. Questions and comments? Please visit myopiapodcast.com/missionbriefing or contact us through myopiamissionbriefing@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @missionbriefing, and @myopiapodcast, and find us on Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. Want to help us out? Go to myopiapodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia and Mission Briefing get a piece of the action.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace. Can't have it all, and nobody will.
The world is James Bond will return in Die Another Day.